Members, the Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on that microphone in front of you for the roll call. Kirsten, please call the roll.
Chair Lupus.
Here.
Vice Chair Coster.
Here.
Ranking Member Davis.
Here.
Representative Caruso.
Here.
Representative DeSegli.
Here.
Representative Duggan.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hunchowski.
Here.
Representative Lamarca. Representative Learned.
Here.
Representative McCurdy.
Here.
Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon.
Here.
Representative Roach.
Present.
Representative Rodriguez. Representative Trabulsi.
Here.
Representative Trunau.
Here.
Representative Williams.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Kirsten. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Members, as always, please silence all of your electronic devices and be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee or the presenters. So members, Florida has long been regarded as having some of the most robust open government laws in the country, and that is because the citizens of this state decided decades ago that government is most effective, efficient, and representative when it is transparent and accountable to the people. Members, those same principles apply to education in Florida, which plays a key role in preparing students to be engaged, responsible adults, and in developing a thriving economy. So the law requires school districts to publish information that helps their local community determine return on investment, instructional quality, and compliance with the law, including issues such as school district budget, expenditure figures, procedures for adopting course curricula, and reports on subjects school districts are required by law to teach. The law also requires school districts to provide the public opportunities for input on the adoption and use of appropriate instructional materials and library books. So today, we have Todd Clark from the Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability, also known as OPAGA, is here to present on these transparency requirements and give the committee a sense of school district compliance. Mr. Clark, you are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. As was mentioned, my name is Todd Clark, and I'm a senior analyst for OPAGA. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to present on some of the research that we accomplished this morning on school district requirements for academic and fiscal transparency. OPAGA was directed to collect information on whether school districts provide parents and the public access to certain fiscal and academic information. We focused on three areas. First, we looked at fiscal information, including an annual report that school districts an annual report of the school district's administrative and instructional expenditures, as well as the district's proposed, tentative, and official budgets. Second, we looked at information on how parents and the public may participate in the evaluation and selection of instructional materials, and how parents are notified of the process in the evaluation and selection of instructional materials, and how students may be exempted from the teaching of reproductive health and disease education. And finally, we looked at implementation plans from the district for required health education topics, including mental and emotional health, substance abuse, child trafficking, and child trafficking prevention. So I'd like to give you a quick overview of the methodology we used for doing this research. To accomplish this research, OPAGA reviewed the applicable state statutes and State Board of Education rules. We then surveyed 73 school districts, the 67 county-level districts, the four developmental research schools, the Florida Virtual School, and the Florida School for the Deaf and the Blind to determine if they reported meeting these transparency requirements. Independently, OPAGA reviewed all the school district websites to search for a subset of the required postings. 70 of the 73 school districts we surveyed provided at least a partial response to OPAGA's survey. 56 of the respondents fully completed the survey. OPAGA provided numerous reminders and opportunities for all school districts to reply to this request for information. So we'll first look at the reported results for fiscal transparency. OPAGA requested information from the school districts on meeting two requirements related to fiscal transparency. Florida statutes require the posting of an annual accountability report that includes total revenues and expenditures that support school level and district level operations. Florida statutes also require the districts to post their proposed, tentative, and official budgets on the school district's website. So as part of our survey, we asked the school districts if they met these requirements And if so, how they notified parents and the public. So as you can see on this slide, 77% of the school districts reported meeting all of the requirements for these two fiscal transparency postings. For the annual accountability report, there were small differences in the percentages of districts that notified parents of students in the district versus the general public. The most common method of notification was to post these reports and budgets on the school district's website. Other means of notification by the school districts included individual school websites and the use of newspaper notifications. We'll now look at our results for instructional materials transparency. Florida statutes require school districts to maintain a list of instructional materials by grade level purchased by the school district and used in a classroom. School districts are also responsible for the content of instructional materials made available in the school library or included on any reading lists. The law also requires school districts to adopt and clearly describe a process for parents of the public to object to specific instructional materials. The law also requires that if a school district board chooses to implement its own instructional material adoption program, it must allow the public to review the materials at least 20 days prior to the school board meeting that it's going to potentially adopt the materials. The public must be notified of which instructional materials will be reviewed and how parents of the public may offer evidence that the recommended materials do not meet statutory criteria. Finally, Florida statutes were amended in 2021 to require the school district to notify parents of their right and the process to request that students be exempted from the teaching of reproductive health and diseases. So as part of our survey, we asked the school districts if they met these requirements, and if so, how they notified parents and the public. 65% of the school districts responding reported that school districts posted a list of materials used in classrooms, available in school libraries, or included on reading lists. Most, 94%, notified parents and the public regarding their right to review and object to instructional materials used in the classroom. The percentages were smaller for postings related to material available in the school library, about 80%, and for reading lists, which was 70%. Common notification methods used by school districts include posting on the school district's website, posting on individual school websites, and again, newspaper notifications. Most districts responding, again, 94%, reported that they met all the requirements to notify parents and the public regarding meeting notifications for the review and the potential adoption of instructional materials. Common notification methods include using the school district's website, newspaper notices, and documentation that's included in local school board meetings or workshops. As noted here, 87% of the responding districts reported that they notify parents of how to request an exemption for instruction on reproductive health and disease education. Common methods used included postings on the school district's website, emails to parents, and letters sent home to parents. Now, in this case, APAGA attempted to find these links on the district's websites over a period of about 5 minutes. This work was done independently of the survey to the school districts, and analysts conducting these websites reviews did not know if the school district reported that the postings were available, or they also did not know the link that the school district provided for where the posting was located. The APAGA analysts who did this review were aware of the most common places where these postings would be located, and also, if available, use search tools on the school district site if other navigational efforts were not effective. When APAGA analysts independently tried to locate the links on instructional materials for reproductive health and disease education, and the required links to notify parents of their right to request an exemption from the teaching of reproductive health and disease education, we were only able to locate those postings in a fewer than 20% of the district's websites. You'll notice that with these low percentages, the posting requirements were based on a statute that became effective on July 1st of this year, and our survey data was collected in late August, and our review of the websites was also done in late August. So it may be the case that some school districts had not had time to fully implement these requirements. Next, we're going to look at transparency related to required instruction. Florida statutes provides a list of topics that school districts are required to provide as part of classroom instruction. This list includes a broad range of topics, such as the history and content of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. State Board Administrative Rule specifically calls for three health education areas: mental and emotional health education, substance use and abuse health education, and child trafficking prevention education, to have their implementation plans both submitted to the Department of Education and posted on the school district's website. These implementation plans usually include a list of grade level appropriate instructional materials, and for middle and high school students, it also includes the courses where this instruction will be incorporated. Again, we surveyed the school districts to ask if they met these requirements and how they notified parents and the public. Again, most districts, 94%, reported that they met all of the requirements to post implementation plans for these health education topics. A slightly smaller percentage, 91%, of the districts reported having implementation plans for child trafficking prevention posted relative to the posting of the implementation plans for the other two health education topics. Most districts use their school district website to post these implementation plans. The OPAGA analysts were able to find the postings for the implementation plans for these three health education topics that were required to be posted for most, 63 to 70% of the school districts within the 5 minute time frame that we allowed ourselves. The Florida Department of Education has implemented a required instruction reporting portal, which they use to collect implementation plans for all of the required instruction. And many of the school districts just link to this portal as a way to show their implementation plans for these three specific health education topics. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clark. Members, any questions? Representative Roche, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, sir, for that informative presentation and the data. Quick question on the opt-out mechanism for reproductive health and other such things. Given the difficulty in finding that opt-out provision, would it make more sense to have parents opt in for those types of things instead of trying to opt out?
So, you're recognized.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a good policy question. Again, within the scope of what we were asked to look for, we reviewed what the Florida law currently requires and whether or not the districts had done what the law currently requires.
Follow up? You recognize.
And just, you know, so is it your assessment that the districts are following the law in that regard?
So I think it's our assessment that these things were not as easy to find. I mean, again, we had, when OPAGA is looking for this, we kind of knew the places where we could go on a website. I think what the data shows is that it takes a little more effort to really be able to find these links.
Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? Representative, Ranking Member Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. On slide five, it shows three counties, it seems like, did not respond to this survey at all. Was that Okaloosa, Walton, and Volusia? Is there a reason why?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This was I don't know that I have a reason why. We did reach out numerous times. So after we sent the initial survey out, we had some indication that sometimes, because this was coming from a survey link, that not all of the surveys went directly to their email. They may have gone to a spam folder or a junk mail folder. So we followed up, and each school district received at least two phone calls from OPAGA to try and follow up, and if we needed to, we resent the link to the survey. So I think the fact that we had 70 of the 73 respond was pretty good. I can't answer as to why those three did not respond.
You recognize.
Thank you for that. In just looking at the survey itself, we see that in some of the areas there was a 90 to 95%, you know, rate, 80%, 82%. One question is, in some of the assessment with materials in the school libraries, there's a difference between, and I'm on slide 11, the 82% in the notification of parents versus the 80% in notification of the public. My question to that is, what is the difference in reporting?
So what we were trying to, excuse me.
You're
What we were trying to get at by distinguishing between those two questions was that some districts in providing the notification to parents use a parent portal. So this is something that the school district has on their website where parents have credentials that they can sign in to get access to see and review different information. But a member of the public who doesn't have a student who's in one of those schools would not have the credentials to access the parent portal. So in addition to making these required transparency issues available to parents, some of the school districts had a separate way that they would notify the public that wasn't part of the parent portal. So we were trying to give the school districts the ability to distinguish between whether they were providing these notifications specifically to parents, either through a letter home or through the parent portal, and then how they were also might be available to the public that would be outside of something that would only be available to parents.
One more, and then you can go to someone
else. You recognize.
From this study, going back to the counties that did not respond, is there any recommendation from OPAGA to encourage those counties to respond? Is there any penalties because they didn't respond, or this is just an identification of those counties not responding to this survey?
You recognize.
Thank you for the question. It's just a recognition that they didn't respond.
Representative Caruso, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Clark, for your presentation. So, when it comes to health and disease education transparency requirements, we're not being very, the school districts are not being transparent at all. Would you agree?
So what I would argue is that they generally reported that they had those links available on their site. What we discovered as we went in to try and find those was that it wasn't as easy to find as could be.
And may I follow up?
Yep.
What I'm concerned about is, you know what you're doing, I assume. I'm gonna give you that. And you know how to, you know their website in websites in general and the way they are set up. I'm worried about the parent that doesn't even have a computer or internet access or the capability, the computer capabilities to go on and navigate a website, should they go to the library or something to look it up. And that's a significant portion of our population that doesn't have that kind of access or knowledge. So, but I am, you know, what do you have to say to that?
You recognize.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the question. The one thing I would say is that we did hear back from several school districts that in addition to the website postings, they also sent letters home with students and also in some cases used emails. I think that the school districts provided us with some information that the posting on their website wasn't the only means that they were using to provide these notifications.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You recognize.
Thank you. Letters are sent home with regards to health and disease education transparency, but I did not see that method as a primary source. It was all district website, school websites, and newspapers used regarding the reading materials and other instructional materials and things. That wasn't the method used.
Right, for that, you're right, yes, sir.
And follow up.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that something you'd be recommending to do the letters home thing with regards to reading materials and instructional materials, et cetera?
You recognize.
Again, OPAGA is not in the business of making official recommendations, but I do think that the law was clear that these notifications are to be provided in such a way that the public and the parents can have access. And as you mentioned, if they don't have computer access, then having some other way to get that information might be important.
Thank you. No further.
Representative Duggan, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to clarify, and I apologize that perhaps you explained this more clearly and I just missed it. But for example, on this slide, just as an example, where you say APAGA could not find the information on many districts within a five-minute search, and then you give the percentages. Are you indicating that in those instances you never found it, or you only 8% had anything on the website that all related to their obligation to provide this information, or just we eventually found it, but it took us a long time?
You recognize.
So what this slide represents is that for the health and disease education curriculum, within a five-minute period, we found 8%. On 8% of the districts, we found it within 5 minutes. For the rest of them, we stopped at that point. The district may have given us information about where it was located. So I'm not claiming that it isn't there, but I'm just saying that within 5 minutes, we were only able to find it for 8% of the district websites that we reviewed.
Follow up?
Okay, just to put a fine point on the clarification. So it may be that it's not there. We don't know because we don't. The search stopped. Okay, thank you.
Representative Tribolsi, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. My question, even though this is supposed to be, information is supposed to be available to not only the parents in the district, but also the public, going back to the parent portal, were you able to identify when districts told you that the information was on a parent portal, if it actually was or not?
You recognize.
Thank you. It's a good question. We did ask if they provided information about where it was posted or if it was posted on a parent portal. We did ask the district to give us a link to that. So we have that information collected, but we did not independently go to actually verify because we didn't have credentials to get into the parent portal.
Representative McCurdy, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark, thank you for your presentation and good morning. On slide 11, it mentions 65% of districts reported notifying parents and the public of their ability to review materials at 65%. And I just want to point out that that's a C+. We can do better than that. And back to Rep. Caruso's point about the common methods used, especially in my district, I don't know how often parents check out district websites and school websites. And I just want to, I know APAGA isn't, making recommendations, but if I may just make a recommendation, I know text messages are a useful tool for parents in receiving information. We have our cell phones in our hand all day, every day. And I know there are a lot of times, even in my district, I hear from parents that our school district sends too many text messages. So at least we know they'll get the information. So I just wanted to make that, that recommendation. Thank you.
You recognize.
Thank you, sir. That's a good idea. We did include as part of the survey questions, the school district could mention whether they use social media, and we would have included texting as part of social media. And we did get a very small percentage of responses. I didn't list it on the slide because we kind of had a threshold for the percentages, but we did have a small percentage of districts that are using social media.
You recognize.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark. I know when I was in school, report cards were paper. They went home with the students. No, I'm not sure if that's still the case today. And if there's an opportunity for us to provide information with report cards or progress reports that go home with students, or if there, do parents get these progress reports from report cards electronically today? Or if there's an opportunity for us to provide that with the paper progress reports and report cards that go home with the students?
You recognize?
Yes, sir. Again, a great question. My understanding is that many districts are kind of using both. So they have a parent portal that only the parent has credentials to be able to see, and they may get student information about grades in that parent portal, but they're also providing written materials that go home. And we did, just to be clear, we did have a small percentage of districts that mentioned that they were sending letters home and sending information home and doing notifications that way.
Representative Honchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I had a couple of questions. When you talk about the common methods used, we don't have any percentages on which methods are used more or used less or how often they're used. Do you have any additional information that isn't in the presentation as to what percentage, for example, are using the district website, which percentage are using newspapers or the school website or emails?
You recognize?
Yes, ma'am, we have that information.
Is it is it in the presentation?
It's not in the presentation, Mr. Chair. I'm sure if you'd like us to get additional information, we could provide
it. If you provide it to us, we'll provide it to the full committee.
May I have?
You recognize, yep.
Thank you, Chair. So my question is then, is part of the study also finding out what the best practices have been in how we're sharing this information and trying to communicate? Because as a parent, I can tell you we get stuff at home all the time, remember these days, and you sometimes become overwhelmed. So when we have the data, were you also looking at what were the best practices for providing the information?
You recognize.
So thank you. That's a very good question. I think really the scope of what we were trying to look at was how districts are doing this. And our survey, we gave them several different ways to provide information back to APAGA about how they were doing this. But we didn't specifically ask which one they considered best practices.
You recognize.
Don't you think it would be helpful to kind of know which ones are the best practices as opposed to just knowing what they're actually doing?
You recognize.
Yes. And again, that could be something that we would follow up if directed to do so.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Tribolsi, you're recognized for another series of questions.
Thank you, Chair. My question really follows in line with Representative Hunchowski. Is this study complete? This just seems like a very vague overview. And when we're looking at different districts, I would like to know, you know, which ones actually are in compliance and which ones aren't. And then maybe be able, of course, from our end, take a deeper dive into, of course, like what's the demographic there and how maybe they're communicating the best way that they can due to the proximity. Maybe it's a rural area and they're going to send papers home because they have a huge digital divide. But to me, this doesn't, it's a great presentation, but I would like to see a more full and comprehensive study.
Mr. Cook, can you provide us with the details regarding the specific districts?
Yes, we can.
Any further?
So that really wasn't a question, it was a comment, but thank you.
So just, Mr. Clark, following up on Representative Tribolsi's questions, were the districts that, were the districts notified as to whether or not they were in compliance or not following the study?
Mr. Chair, the report that we're providing here is whether the districts reported it to us as having met the requirements or not. So what we can provide to you would be a list of the districts who told us that they are not meeting the requirements, because that's what they told us in their survey response.
Members, any further questions? Last call. All right, Mr. Clark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You recognize Representative Duggan?
I want to apologize for not asking for permission to ask a follow-up question.
Your apology is not accepted. So please don't ever let that happen again. So members, that concludes our meeting today of the best committee ever. Seeing that there is no further business, Representative Duggan moves that we rise.